This is a lullaby. A lullaby with laughter.
I'm so sorry.
Chastity and Caramello Swan are sisters. They are throat singing, which is an art form, but also a game. The two hold each other arm in arm, face to face. And using their throat, belly, and diaphragm, they expel sounds. The first to laugh is the loser. Okay. Third time's the charm. This is a love song, one that Nikki Kumuksiotiksak says is meant to soothe a baby on their mother's back.
Traditionally, Inuit women wore a baby carrier, and it's called an amauti. When the baby is sitting against your back with their ear against your back, you hear the vibration of your voice. You really have to be in tune with your partner. You have to feel each other's energy. You're looking at each other and you're feeling each other and you're listening to each other. It's a lot of work, and you're either born with it or you're not.
You were saying it was really hard. Danse, Anine, Bujou, hello and welcome. This is Unreserved. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. Throat singing is an Inuit tradition where a pair of women sing in rhythmic patterns. It's a unique skill, a bonding activity, and a lot of fun. For almost 100 years, the practice was banned by Christian missionaries who had a lot of power and influence in the North. But that started to change in the 80s when women stood up in defiance of the ban and began to reclaim the practice. It meant that women like Nikki Kumuksiotiksak were able to hold on to their Inuit identity.
In order for me to feel like I was alive and that I had something that was me, it was my throat singing, because that's what I grew up listening to back home, and then something that I learned as a child.
And sister duo Pilk Silk elevate and celebrate the art form through their electro-pop throat singing music mix.
There's something about when an Inuk loves your music that it's really important to us. And so I guess we just kind of see it as our little drop into the bucket of the collective cultural reclamation that's happening.
Today on Radio Indigenous, whether it's keeping the tradition alive to survive and thrive, or creating a contemporary music mix to reach and teach more people, these Inuit women are throat singing back their culture. Nikki Kumuksiotiksak has been throat singing since she was 8 years old. For Nikki, throat singing is a way to connect to her culture, her family, and the land. And to keep those connections strong, she passed on the tradition to her daughters, Chastity and Caramello Swan. In turn, the mother-daughter-daughter trio shares that gift with audiences on stages all over Turtle Island. We invited them into the CBC studios to share their knowledge about the power and joy of throat singing. Once we got the giggles under control. Thank you, Chastity and Caramello Swan, for that that beautiful exercise, even though you kept giggling through the whole thing. Okay, well, let's start with you, Nikki. How would you describe the tradition of throat singing?
Most times, in order for the general public to understand what throat singing is, I always tell the story, the creation story that was passed down to me by my grandmother, to better understand where throat singing came from, I tell this story to honor my ancestors and to honor my grandmother. So a long time ago, Inuit lived in igloos, and there were different roles for different genders. The men's role was to go out in groups and go hunting, and sometimes they would be gone for days and sometimes weeks, depending on the migration of the animals. The women's role was to stay back in the community and teach the children the way of life in the north, how to be safe around the seawater, how to sew, how to cook. One day when a group of men went out hunting, they never came back to the community to feed the women and children. Several things could have happened to the men. They could have fell through the ice and drowned, got lost and froze to death, or mauled by animals like polar bears. And that's just the harsh reality of life in the north and still is today. And as a result of the men not coming back to the communities to feed the women and children, a lot of the children were starving, and mothers, being the life givers of humanity, needed to find a way to feed their children. So two women went down to the ocean and they started mimicking different animal noises with their throats. And when they did that, they found that they attracted smaller animals. So that's how they caught their food to feed their children. So a true story of survival, and gives you a glimpse of what life was like, you know, a long time ago. Today, typically, throat singing, you know, is two women, they're facing face to face, they're looking into each other's eyes, mimicking different animal noises from the environment, or just noises from the environment, not necessarily animals. And basically, the first person that laughs is a loser. So it's a bit of a competition form now. And as we know, as a result of colonization and the assimilation policies that were enacted by the federal government on our people, throat singing was banned for about 100 years. It's a tradition that was almost lost within our culture. And so to be able to revitalize the throat singing back into our culture and to teach that, I think is a beautiful thing to watch unfold.
It's so bizarre to think that it used to be banned. Like, who banned singing, right?
Right. But we see that all across Canada, with Indigenous nations all across Canada, those assimilation policies enacted upon Indigenous folks took away from the very fiber of their culture as a way to take the Indian out of, or the Inuk out of, the child. And so those policies that were enacted really forged the way with how our cultures were back then. And so to revitalize that and bring that back, I think shows true strength, and the strength that was given to us by our ancestors, because they paved the way for us to be able to have that voice, and for, you know, Canadians to listen to the true history of Indigenous peoples across this land. And crazy to think that, you know, little as 50 years ago, that we couldn't throat sing.
Do you know when it started to be reclaimed and revitalized?
Honestly, I moved to the city of Winnipeg in 1991, 1992. So I was about 6 years old when I moved to Winnipeg. And by the time I was 8 years old, me and my three cousins, so there was four of us girls, we were listening to APTN and we heard throat singing by elders, and we were like, oh, that is so cool. And so we just kind of practiced, like, as little kids, like, because it sounded so cool and it was a part of our culture. And then from there, we started traveling the world throat singing. We were making albums and we were really educating Canadians about who Inuit are. You don't read it in history books at all. So I feel like it was, you know, the mid 90s when throat singing was starting to come back into our culture.
Wow, that's not that long ago.
That's not that long ago.
I think I had one of your CDs. How difficult is it physically to do throat singing?
Well, it's actually quite difficult. There's a lot of mistakes you can make, and you can actually damage a lot of part of your vocal cords or your voice box if it's not done properly. But not only that, there's so many different techniques that you have to really know, like your breathing technique, how to inhale and exhale appropriately, you know, the noises that you're bringing in from your guttural part of your tummy up into your voice box. You have to know exactly how those sounds need to be made so that you're not damaging your vocal cords. And so you don't want to pass out either, right? So your inhaling and exhaling is a really important aspect of throat singing. And it's really hard. You're either born with it or you're not.
Uh-huh. Let's talk a little bit about more about how you started to learn throat singing. You mentioned that you started as a child in the 90s. Where did you originally come from?
So I was born in Winnipeg. So like many Inuit from different parts of the north, in order to give birth to your child, every Inuk in part of the north had to go to an urban setting to deliver. And so that's why the majority of Inuit that you see on their birth certificates, their place of birth is Winnipeg, because back then, before the introduction of medical boarding homes, Inuit had to come here to deliver their child alone without other family members with them. So my mother had me here in Winnipeg, but I was raised in different parts of the north. My family is from Chesterfield in Lit Nunavut originally. I started throat singing when I was 8. And so myself and my 3 cousins, you know, living in an urban setting and not having resources or a place to go to feel like you're a part of a community, there never was anything here for Inuit whatsoever. And so my aunt was very vocal and very adamant that living in an urban setting, we needed to keep our culture alive. So speaking Inuktitut, eating our traditional foods, and singing in our language and throat singing as well. Those were really important aspects that she really pushed on us girls growing up. You know, like the fact that as 8, 9, 10-year-old, 11-year-old girls, to be able to travel the world and showcase part of a culture that no one really knows or understands, it was that cool feeling. But behind closed doors, my aunt was violently aggressive. And so at the age of 13, myself and my other cousin, Jessica, who is the same age as me, we actually ran away because we didn't want to experience that type of abuse anymore. And it was abuse that, you know, no child should ever have to face. And it wasn't until I was older and going, you know, learning more about residential schools, because you weren't taught that in grade school. And it wasn't until I was in university that I was, you know, the topic of residential schools were coming up. And so my whole family is a product of the residential school system. So I understand why my aunt was the way she was towards us. She had no coping skills whatsoever. You know, and then at the age of 13, me and my sister ran away, and we actually lived from group home to group home, foster home to foster home. At one point, I think I counted, I lived in 16 different group homes and foster homes in a 2-year period. And the mandate back then when I was in care was that children, Indigenous children in care, had to take programming of some sort that reflected their culture. But because there was absolutely nothing for Inuit in the city of Winnipeg, I was told that I needed to, I had no choice but to take programming. So I did powwow singing and powwow dancing, which isn't of my culture. I was forced to do that. I say I was forced to do that by policies enacted within the child welfare system, but the community of people that I met down on the powwow trail, they're my family, and they will be my family forever. They welcomed me in. They supported me. They were there for me. So I'll always forever be grateful for that. But those systems is what caused, you know, a lot of the ripple effects of colonization and intergenerational traumas. And as a result of that, I couldn't take programming that reflected my culture, because there was nothing to keep my culture alive within myself, and keeping my identity at my core, remembering who I was and that not being stripped away from me. I would throat sing to the girls in the group homes and to the workers that were working, or, you know, school or whatever, because that was my identity. And I needed to ensure that I did not forget where I came from and who I was. And so I kept that with me throughout these years, obviously. And my adult daughters are now throat singers. So that's been my journey with my throat singing.
Why did you want to hold down onto that part of yourself, the throat singing? And I just love the image of you singing to others, singing to the other children. Why did you want to pass it on that way and keep it?
Because I knew that that was a very big part of who I was. I was lost in a system where I had no idea where my family was for a very long time. I didn't even know where my mother was. It was a very sad part of my life, and it was a very hard part of my life. I really had to learn how to survive the streets on my own. And I knew that in order for me to feel like I was alive and that I had something that was me, it was my throat singing, because that's what I grew up listening to back home and then something that I learned as a child in an urban setting, like that's kind of unheard of, especially something that's so cultural and so traditional. To learn that outside of your homelands is like unheard of, especially when there was nothing here in the city or in any urban setting for that matter. It's just always been something that was important to me and I knew I had to hold on to it.
Would you say then that the power of throat singing sort of saved you?
Absolutely it did.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that with me. That's a beautiful story. This is Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, U.S. Public Radio and Native Voice 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. Today, how Inuit throat singing is being reclaimed and revived. After being banned for almost 100 years in Canada, Inuit throat singing is on a cultural comeback. We'll hear more from Nikki Kumuksiotiksuk and her daughters, Chasity and Caramello Swan, a little later in the show. But first, the art of throat singing continues to evolve through performers like Pilk Silk. The sister duo blend throat singing with electronic beats. Here they are now with their song, Converge.
Thank you.
That is Converge by Pilk Silk, an electronic throat singing duo composed of sisters Inukshuk Mackay and Tiffany Ialik. Converge is about coming together in spite of hardships and the shared commitment to stand strong in the face of oppression. Traditional Inuit throat singing encompasses just that. It's a revolutionary act that stands proud and defiant in the face of those who tried to ban it. Inukshuk and Tiffany are a small but vibrant part of its reclamation. They join me now. Welcome to Unreserved.
Thanks so much for having us, Rosanna. Happy to be here.
Let's start with Inukshuk. How much was throat singing part of your life as a child?
I would say it was a very normal sort of, I don't want to say not special, but sort of like a, you know, if you ask a kid when they first learned to do ABCs, they probably wouldn't be able to tell you exactly when. So it was something that we did together as sisters. We also would practice the game with our cousins. And we were very lucky to have some aunties and some family friends that also taught us songs. So it was a very sort of just normal part of childhood for us.
And Tiffany, do you remember when you started to learn this art form?
Yeah, I think it was same feeling as Inukshuk. It was kind of infused in throughout our childhood when we were really young. And I remember a lot doing it on camping trips when, you know, when we're out of coloring books, we're out of batteries on whatever, we're, you know, looking for things to do on like week three of being in the bush. And a lot of things we would kind of turn to at that time would be, you know, like, let's sing it, let's go for a walk, let's go paddling, let's go, you know, go out in the bush and or out on the water and sing with each other.
I love that. What a beautiful image that gives me in my mind. Can you tell me, you know, what throat song you remember singing at your earliest memory?
I think the first one that I remember, like, us nailing and being like, oh, we did it, like, because it felt so hard at the time, was the song Rain. It's just like when you're a toddler and you first start kind of taking those unsure steps and then you kind of figure it out and you're like, oh, I can change direction now. Like, whoa.
What did it feel like to bond with your, you know, your sister and your other family members in this way?
I mean, I feel like it was a little bit of everything. So like Tiff saying, there's that beautiful satisfaction you get when it clicks and you're like, ah, I got it. And then there's also those kind of funny sister moments where you're like, no, you messed it up. No, you messed. No, you did that part wrong.
I don't know what you're talking about, Inukshuk.
And then there's, you know, the fun, like, okay, now everybody sit down. We are going to sing for you now. You know, the kind of cute putting on the dinner theater aspect at home when you're seven. So there's a lot of really good memories. And I think that the way that we are as sisters really comes through in our work.
Mm. You mentioned the song Rain, which is, you know, one of the earliest songs that you remember learning. What are some of the other themes or elements present in Inuit throat singing in a traditional sense?
Yeah, in a traditional sense, there's deep, deep inspiration taken from the natural world. So weather, seasons, animals, chores, anything that makes a sound can be used as inspiration for a throat song. And, you know, we have songs like Saw or Boiling Seal Flipper, Rain, Wind, you know, so there's all Wolf, Dog Team, all of these things that you can imagine making sound. And some songs are like a direct imitation of the sound, and others are more of a sort of interpretation. And then some of the other themes on sort of like a meta level are, you know, things that you do when you're singing, which is like kind of give and take with your partner and like listening as much as you're offering, going with where the song goes and being open to surprises. And there are songs that have like a set form and a set way of singing them, and then there's ones that are much more improvisational where you're kind of like open to the gods, as we call it, you know, you're just kind of open to where the song wants to go. and it's a vocal dance that you do with your partner.
Mm. And as well as being sort of a bonding exercise and a game, as I understand it, throat singing also sort of was a storytelling or a way for women to tell those stories. Can you tell me a little bit about what the purpose of throat singing was?
Yeah, I think that there's some songs that, like, for example, the Poor Little Dog, Kimili Wakpik, that there is a story that kind of goes along with that song, but there are very few songs that actually have lyrics. There's a couple that do, but it's definitely more uncommon. So I think there are some songs that have like the story of how a song was created, but I think overall it's very open to the listener and kind of whoever's listening can think and feel whatever they're going. And it's not in the same way that some other forms of Inuit music, like the Pihit songs that are these epic long sagas sometimes that have like dozens and dozens and dozens of verses and have, you know, long ranging stories that go along with them. But for the most part, the throat songs, very few have lyrics and kind of give opportunity to the listener to kind of have their own imaginings when they're listening.
Mm. What can you tell me about the near extinction of this practice?
I mean, along with a lot of other indigenous practices across this country, it was heavily tabooed and even illegal at one point. And you could be fined or even imprisoned if you were caught practicing. So, of course, it went underground and we did lose a lot of songs. But by the 1950s, we had our first Anglican minister who was Inuk. And he had it on his radar that the songs were going extinct. So he sort of helped to break that taboo. And he invited a bunch of women to record on wax cylinder to try to preserve these songs. And I think that was probably the seed that planted the beginning of it coming back in a very day-to-day way. So by the time Tiff and I were kids, it was common to see kids throat singing again. But we didn't know very many songs, so it was very limited. You know, there was like five or six that kind of everybody knew, where previously there would have been, I don't even know, hundreds, I'm imagining. We kind of noticed that sometimes when you ask certain people, when you're kids, they had a funny look or a funny tone when you would ask them about cultural things. But in Inuit culture, we really believe on protecting a kid's heart and mind until they're old enough to understand certain things. So we didn't really know the ins and outs of colonization or residential school. And it wasn't until we were teenagers when we started to ask, like, how come people get kind of awkward when you ask if they can teach you a song? And finally somebody broke the ice about what our people had been through. And so I think at that point we shifted ATIF to a little bit more serious, I would say. Like, we took it seriously. We still have a ton of fun and we love to laugh, but I think it felt very, very important at that point that we learn as much as we can, as well as we can, to do our little part to help preserve alongside, you know, many, many other wonderful, brave women who were also reclaiming the practice.
Mm. What about for your own family and ancestors? What can you, how did your family keep the practice alive?
We have a cousin in Kogluktuk named Ivik Ayalik, and man, she is so good. So she was probably the best throat singer and still is to this day that I think we know. And she was the coolest cousin.
Yeah, the cool older cousin.
Yeah, totally. So she would actually record herself on cassette because this was like I don't even have a computer in the house, I don't think, at that point. And pre-internet. So she would record on one of those little handheld cassettes and mail the tapes to us in Yellowknife through the mail. So it was exciting to get them and play them and then try to figure out and deconstruct what they were doing and recreate it together.
Man, that must have been like getting like joining up for one of those cassette clubs. You get a new cassette every month.
Yeah, totally. Columbia. Clubhouse. Yeah, yeah. Columbia House, right.
The Nunavut Clubhouse Records.
That's what you should call it, Nunavut Records. Who do you make this music for?
I think we started doing it, honestly, for us when we were kids, for fun. At first, it was fun. And I think when we got a bit more serious about it, it felt like we wanted to preserve it for anyone in the future who wanted to learn. And our primary audience is always Inuit. We love singing for Inuit. We love all of our fans very, very much. There's something about when an Inuk loves your music that it's really important to us. And so I guess we just kind of see it as our little drop into the bucket of the collective cultural reclamation that's happening mm-hmm. all over the place right now. Mm-hmm.
I do want to circle back to that. But first, what kind of, in terms of non-Inuit audiences, what do you call them? Kalanak? Is that right?
Kadlunak, yeah.
What challenges have you faced in making this art form sort of, you know, more accessible or available to these audiences?
That's a really interesting question. And the answer is varied. I feel like as Canadians, it can be harder to have some of the more nuanced conversations about reclamation and appropriation versus appreciation, because I feel like sometimes here in Canada, we really love to think that we're super great at the quote unquote indigenous issue, the colonization issue. And then like once in a while, there's some people that are like, yeah, that was cool, but where's the real music? And I'm like, what do you mean? So those things, thankfully, are definitely like a very on the outside. And we've been really lucky, you know, when we have a platform and when we have an ability to be like talking about our shows, that it's really important for us to be sharing the ingenuity, the brilliance, the beauty, the creativity of Inuit. We get also bogged down by getting stuck in the trauma soup of things. And, you know, there's only so much you can do from that place. And when we can share like just the beauty and the humor and the humanity of what we're doing and who we are as people, I think that is a lot more potent at times.
In terms of throat singing, even though, you know, that's just one part of the culture, how far do you think how much of it do you think has been reclaimed or reimagined since you started doing it?
It's been so amazing to see since we were kids throat singing a little bit on like APTN here and there, or on Igalak on CBC, or, you know, little wafts of it around the radio. And, you know, in a very strict traditional sense. And then, you know, seeing people like Susan Oglukak or other prominent Inuit who were in the music industry that kind of launched out of a regional, you know, territorial significance into like, she's on the cover of Chatelaine, or she's like, wow, Inuit are like making moves. And there is a music video of an Inuk on MTV. Holy smokes. Like, to be able to see the momentum with which that has really picked up since we were kids. And now people are like doing stuff, some of the things that we're doing, or are like weaving throat singing with like Celtic music or with rock and roll, or, you know, country and folk and electronic stuff. And I just feel like there's a beautiful momentum that's happening where people are seeing how beautiful it is as a practice and how complementary it is to collaborate these sounds with like things that you would never think of putting together, and to see how it's embraced and put into these amazing, surprising forms of expression. I'm just so excited.
And is that what inspires you to continue doing this work, or what makes you keep going?
I think for me, it's the young folks. I'm so in awe of the generation that's, again, just trying to use everything that they have access to learn as whatever they can. And there's such a hunger there. And I think as we get a little bit older, it'll start to be, you know, our job to be able to feed that hunger in ways that satisfy this appetite that young people have to reclaim culture.
What is your hope that, you know, what once those young people have heard you and know that this is something that they can do, what is the hope for the future of throat singing and Inuit cultural practices in general?
My hope is that they will be able to experience an immense cultural pride. I think Tiff and I are old enough that we, when we were kids, there was definitely a heavy blanket of shame still there. So I don't want to at all compare or take away from what our parents went through, our aunties or uncles, but the blanket of shame was definitely a factor for us growing up. And I don't want that blanket on the next generation. I want them to just be able to play, to have fun, to find that joy in the music. And, you know, when they're singing with their partner and someone starts to crack a smile and then it's just an uproar of belly laughter, that's what I wish for them.
Tiffany Anukshuk, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks so much, Rosanna.
Pilk Silk is an electronic throat singing duo consisting of Inuit sisters Inukshuk Mackay and Tiffany Ialik. You're listening to Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, U.S. Public Radio, and Native Voice 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. Today, how Inuit women are reclaiming the art of throat singing and passing it on to future generations. Inuit throat singing has been making its way into the contemporary music world in recent decades. Artists like Tujat, the Jerry Cans, and Tanya Tagak are celebrated for incorporating this style into their music. In 2014, Tanya Tagak won the Polaris Prize for her album Animism. From that album, this is Caribou. Thank you. That was Tanya Tagak with her song, Caribou. Let's get back to the studio with Nikki Kumoksiotiksak. 7 years ago, Nikki co-founded an organization called Dungasugit. It supports Inuit from the north who are transitioning to life in Winnipeg. The nonprofit helps people access social services and housing. And it also provides cultural connection, something Nikki was missing when she first came to Winnipeg as a kid. One of the ways she has always shared her culture was through throat singing. And today, she's passing down the art form to her daughters, Chastity and Caramello Swan. Here they are performing The Saw.
So the saw, you're mimicking cutting a tree with a handheld saw. It literally sounds like you're cutting a tree with a handheld saw or cutting something with a saw. And so I used to say, it's really interesting that we can make these sounds because in the part of the north that we're from, we have no trees. So how are we cutting a tree with a handheld saw? But interestingly enough, historically speaking, in the late 1800s, northern Manitoba was actually homelands of the Inuit. And it wasn't until the introduction of the Nunavut territory, April 1st of 1999, northern Manitoba, you know, were homelands of the Inuit. And then we have relationships with the Dene and the Cree. And so, you know, obviously there was trading happening back then. And so, of course, we're going to know how to make a sound cutting a tree with a handheld saw. So that's where that comes from.
That is cool. It really does sound like a saw.
Like a doll
like
saw.
Like a little doll saw. Chastity, can you describe for our audience, why do you like to throat sing with your sister? Why is it important to you?
Like, because usually when we were younger, we would fight, and then we would throat sing, and after we'd be best friends again. It's just like, I don't know, it feels good for the soul, like, after you do it. Like, I don't know how to explain it other than that.
Yeah. And what about for you, Caramello?
The reason I like throat singing with Chastity, my sister, and Nikki, my mother, is because I really feel like connected to them. I can feel like when I throat sing with my mother, it's like I remember the vibrations and I remember the feeling of like being in her amauti. Like it's a hug for my heart and my throat.
That's beautiful. I love that. That's poetic. What is it like sharing this tradition with others? Because, you know, your mother grew up performing it and now you've grown up performing it. What's it like sharing it with other people?
I would say when I was younger, I thought it was really scary because my other friends, they weren't like doing things like that. They weren't going to perform or like learning their culture like that. And so it was like really hard when we were younger to like understand like why we were doing it and where it came from and all of that. But now I take pride in it. I feel like it's something that everyone should hear at least once in their life because it's so beautiful.
And for you, what's it like sharing this beautiful tradition with other people?
Well, I used to be very ashamed when I was younger.
Oh, wow. How come?
Just like, it was different. Like, not a lot of people heard it. So it felt awkward, like, sharing it. But now I've come to terms with it and I like it.
Yeah.
You've come to terms with it.
Come to terms with it. I've made peace with it. Why did you feel it was important to teach your kids this art form when, as they said, it was kind of uncomfortable for them?
Well, I didn't have the supports or a community to fall back on here in the city. And I'm not a champion of everything in my culture, but I can try to at least instill some important aspects to our culture to my children. And that's always been something that I was always working towards. Like, there's always that umbrella term Indigenous, but like those distinctions-based cultures are very unique in their own way. And I always wanted my daughters, especially because they're not only Inuk, they're also Ojibwe. So their father comes from Lake Manitoba. And so for them to understand the differences between the two cultures, I thought was also important for them. And before the creation of the organization, I'm a co-founder of and CEO of, there were no programs and services whatsoever available for Inuit until the creation of Dungasugit. And so being able to have those supports in place now for the larger community in the city is beneficial, and it's showing and teaching Manitobans who Inuit are and how different our cultures are, and that's how we kind of learn and exchange information, right? Is by creating and being able to have those conversations and building those relationships. And so for me, it was always important for my girls, from all of my children, to know throat singing, because A, we're now starting to understand the true information of history and the colonization. We never really heard those stories from an Inuit perspective until just recently. And so the Inuit experience is now being heard. And so in order for our children to be able to learn and thrive and understand their culture, they need to be taught even little parts of it. And so throat singing for me was that, understanding that it was banned from our communities for 100 years and that, you know, some of our ancestors have been murdered as a result of practicing those. It gives us more of that strength to be able to overcome those policies that were enacted and to make our culture stronger, and for our Inuit population to feel pride when they think about themselves as Inuit. And just honoring my ancestors, it's always something that's been instilled in me and something that has helped me thrive and survive in this city. So
What an incredible journey, Nikki, to have, you know, come from the past that you've had and the journey that you've been on, the difficult journey that you've been on, and you've reclaimed your Inuit culture and gifted it to others, right, with the organization that you run. Thank you for that. That's a wonderful, inspiring story. Will you do one more song for us? And what will it be? Do you take a, you know, request? Do you need AC/DC? No, I'm just kidding.
So the song we're going to do now is called Polar Bear and Wolf. This song really helped us learn how to breathe while throat singing.
If you could see your mom's expressions when you were singing, she just beams with pride when she listens to you. Why is that a song that you like to share with people?
Well, there's a couple stories behind that song. The noises that they're making is hubbubba, hip hip, hubbubba, hip hip. And so when we would go to schools to teach children or show children what throat singing was, we call it the Hubba Bubba song, as in the bubble gum, you know, so that kids felt like they were a part of the conversation, that they could understand and make them feel more comfortable, because throat singing is so unique and different in and of itself. Some people get scared or they get chills on their backs when they hear throat singing. And so if adults feel that, can you just imagine how children feel when they hear throat singing? And so the Hubba Bubba song was that, to make the children feel like they were a part of something and so that they weren't so scared. But it also teaches this particular throat song teaches those very important aspects to throat singing, the inhalation and exhalation of the noises that you're making. Because if you're not doing that appropriately, you're losing oxygen to your brain and you can pass out, or you're using a part of your vocal cord that you're not supposed to, and now you've just damaged that part. So that throat song really helps you to navigate all of the different layers in throat singing. That's why I like it.
Mm-hmm. And why do you guys like to sing it?
Well, this one, it became my favorite one because, like Nikki said, we call it the Hubba Bubba song. And this little girl, she was so she was so cute. She came to us and she said, "I have a piece of Hubba Bubba for you." And it was so freaking cute.
Aww.
Yeah.
Aww. And for you?
Same.
Same. Ditto. What do you think the power of this tradition will mean for future generations?
I think it will give our future generations the strength and courage to identify themselves as an Inuk. It's very slow moving in our culture right now. Well, first, because when we think about the colonization processes that were enacted on Inuit, I'm third generation off of the land, which means my grandparents lived and were born on the land. And then missionaries came and took them and put them in villages. Mm. And so that's not that long ago. That's 65 plus years ago.
Yeah.
And so when you think about that, Inuit are really just starting to reclaim aspects of their culture, customs, and traditions, and being okay with that. Christianity has overtaken much of our people, which is fine. I mean, people are allowed to have their own beliefs and stuff. And so, but I guess what I'm trying to say is, as a result of that, our cultures were banned, like aspects of our cultures were banned, throat singing, drum dancing. I mean, the fact that, you know, 50 years ago, we have the slaughter of our sled dogs. I mean, you know, there's different aspects to those assimilation policies that were enacted that damaged our people. And so we're just starting to reclaim those aspects. I take pride in watching some of the people that I've grown up with in the Indigenous community in Winnipeg, because they are so advanced in the work that they're doing for their communities. I find that Inuit are about 20 to 25 years behind the things that are transpiring for Indigenous communities and in urban settings. And so that's how I learn and try to like build my community off of watching people like our premier, Wab Kanu, Dr. Sandra Delarond, Jerry Daniels. You know, these are people that are making great changes in the community, and I'm following suit by watching them. And they've, you know, given me the opportunity to watch them to learn.
Well, thank you so much for your time today and your beautiful singing from your daughters.
Of course. Thank you.
Nikki, Carmelo, Chastity, thank you so much.
Thank you, Rosanna.
Nikki Kumoksiotiksuk is Inuk and originally from Chesterfield Inlet, Nunavut. She, along with her daughters, Chastity and Carmelo Swan, are throat singers. That's all our time on Radio Indigenous. This episode was produced by Kim Kasher, Rhiannon Johnson, Danielle Piper, Elena Hudgens-Lyle, and Laura Bone-Stubing. Shout out of love to our recording engineer, Brian Harder. Find more on our website at cbc.ca/unreserved. Listen on the CBC Listen app or your favorite places to pod. I'm your favorite cousin, Rosanna Deerchild, coming at you from Winnipeg in Treaty 1 territory. Ginaskunamit Nawal. Ego say.